So first of all, just a tremendous mazel tov to the Huberfelds, who celebrated really a remarkable bar mitzvah yesterday. It was a very, very special occasion to be part of. Baruch Hashem, we need a good coffee now. Also, I just want to say that I'd like to learn today L'Ilui Nishmas Rabbi Ephraim Ben
Alexander.
Ben Alexander, that is Yoda Hemet's father-in-law, who was Niftar this last week, and our limud should be L'Ilui Nishmas. I gained a tremendous amount just learning about him from being there at the Levaya and onwards. And today is going to be a topic which took me a little while to prepare, actually. This is a very complex topic, and I'm very happy to have had your contribution. So we had a number of questions which people sent in, which were very helpful to be able to get a sense of going in the right direction. So here we are. Let's start at the beginning. So in terms of the history, what started this off actually for me is a number of years ago, my in-laws live in New Haven, and so they have a museum called the Peabody Museum of Yale. It's a museum which has got a large research center, but as well it also has some regulars, you know, dinosaurs and the like, but they have a changing exhibit, a seasonal exhibit. And one year that we went there, they had an exhibit on coffee, and it was a very fascinating exhibit, the history of coffee. The story goes that there was an Ethiopian shepherd who, how was coffee discovered? So that he found that whenever his goats would be eaten from a particular bush, they would not go to sleep at night. They were very frisky that day. And so he knew there was something very special about the quality of these berries, and that was how coffee was originally discovered. Originally, at the outset, actually, when the Ottomans had control of it, the Ottomans didn't want to relinquish the rights to it, so they would search anybody going in and out of the Ottoman Empire they're making sure that they wouldn't be taking coffee beans to go plant plants in coffee beans in Europe, actually. Because there was, for a number of years, the Ottoman Empire had the full control over coffee itself. And there's a very fascinating history of numerous times and numerous estates trying to usurp coffee. Because there was a large concern in the world of Islam and later on in Western Europe about the effects of coffee and the effects of coffee bars. And so there were numerous attempts to try to get rid of coffee as a national institution. And nonetheless, in the end of the day, it is thriving and well. If I'm not mistaken, that Starbucks's profit margin was 35% up from the previous year. In the last year, I mean, it is only going in one direction. And no matter what the CEO says in politics, people seem to still like coffee. And so in the end of the day, coffee is very much part of our lives. And there's a lot of times we have to encounter it. So here are some of the questions I asked people to submit, and there's a number of questions which were submitted. I just wanted to focus on just a few quickly. So from a certain Yossi S., there was mixed coffee drinks made with utensils that are washed in the same dishwasher as non-kosher utensils. Can you use them? So that's a very sophisticated question, because this is getting to some of the guts of what may be a problem over here. Let's move on. There was a certain Eliezer C., who asked, what is the status of iced coffee? Does it have the same halacha as brewed coffee, or is it different? Is it the same process of production, which is always confusing? You never really get to see behind the counter. And then from a certain Shalom H., are there any issues about the use of communal Keurig type machines? The majority of these pods are kosher. Some have no hechsher, particularly the hot cocoa. It is also not uncommon that when starting the brewing cycle, a small amount of the last brew comes in the last cup. And in fact, there was experimental evidence which was also submitted as well, which we'll get to, God willing. And then from a certain Avi H., can I grind beans at Trader Joe's? Very posh thing. We get that on a... This happens all the time. So all coffees, unflavored coffees, kosher. A certain Saul B., I walk into one of those fancy law firms, and I'm offered a drink. I ask for a coffee, thinking they serve it in a paper cup, just like me. I'm not sure what that meant. There's different ways you could read that sentence. In comes an entire sterling silver coffee service, and I'm served in a porcelain or china cup. Can I drink it? Okay. And there were a few other questions, by the way, which I'm not focusing on right now, which were Shabbos related. Right, so we're not going into the Shabbos-related questions. There's simply no time to deal with that. And there were other more Tfilah Shtalas as well. We're not going to get into Tfilah's bigger Keurig machine issues, yeah? And then from a certain Dr. Debbie D., May one buy coffee at a rest stop gas station? Question of how the pot was washed. Is there a concern it should be used previously for other items? Thank you. And this is something we encounter on a... Every time we take a trip, we stop at a rest stop, whether it be a Starbucks or any one of those machines, which has, you know, the French vanilla, hazelnut, and regular coffee. Can you get from one of those machines? And then... And then from a certain Ed S, I just got a picture, which I think says it all for us this morning. When someone asks you to do something before you've had your coffee, I think, if I'm not mistaken, that the submitter of this question is in Florida right now, but is live streaming in right now. So very pleased to have all these questions. Now, we may not get to this because there's a lot of complexity which goes into some of these questions. Just there's a lot of really complex background, so I'd like to give you a little bit of a background to this. It's really, there's a lot to talk about, but the nitty gritty is actually quite nitty and gritty. So let's try to get there. So let's start at the beginning. So the first thing we should ask ourselves is, well, isn't it obvious, Rabbi? Just let's look at the ingredients. It should be simple enough as seeing what's in the package, what's inserted, and we should know why is it all so complicated. So it happens to be that when it comes to the ingredients, it is a little complicated. Here's what the CRC says. This is a listing fact from 2011, so it's not 100% current, but the important point about this list, going through these things, is the following. And that is let's say we're going to go focus on Starbucks for a moment because it actually serves as a great example for the rest of the questions we have, and that is the following. Is that, let's say in a regular Starbucks, what will end up happening is you'll have various things which are all the same around the country. Meaning to say, their coffee grounds, their flavored coffee, their syrups, their whipped creams, they're all the same. However, there are certain things which fluctuate depending on location. So for instance, when it comes to, let's say, Frappuccino base, flavor syrups, right? Those are going to be things which are all across the country, and they're going to be the same status across the country. Caramel syrup, brown sugar, they're going to be across the whole country is going to be exactly the same. Whereas things like, let's say, perhaps milk, when you're going to talk about, let's say, the half and halves, there's eggnog creams, those kind of things are purchased locally and need to actually be checked. So if you're in the Midwest and you happen to be stopping off at a Starbucks, those things, it's not a Starbucks thing. It happens to be where that local franchise is buying from. So that makes a big difference as well. Which is, by the way, why it is in like centers like, Jewish centers like this, let's say the five towns, we have less of those issues if, in fact, the Starbucks is on the same page as which it is, the two ones that are nearby us. So they make a difference, distinction between, let's say, perishable products and, let's say, the syrups, and then let's say, the teas. There happens to be a new range of teas. The Tezos are now actually mostly under Heckscher, if I'm not mistaken, but there's now, Starbucks is a new range, and so we need to also be checking the Heckschers on these. So happens to be the ingredients are mostly, generally, one way or another. So if you go back to that list for just a moment, you'll notice that most of the flavored syrups, many are OU certified, check the package. So the CRC says you just need to double check to see what the flavor is. That's very easy to do. The easy way to ask for this, by the way, is just to say that I've got allergies. When you start explaining religious sensitivities, they get all confused. You just say, I have allergies. Oh, no problem. No, nobody wants to get sued today. So therefore, it's very easy to check the package when it comes to the flavor syrups. Most are OU. The interesting thing you'll notice in this list, which makes a huge difference for us, is Frappuccino. The CRC, this is in 2011, says the Frappuccino base is not certified and contains kosher-sensitive ingredients, which means to say that anything using Frappuccino ingredients according to the CRC would be out automatically without even getting into the door. And this happens to be a matter of debate. Why? Because just in the last month, actually, this is why it's actually very, very relevant, both the CRC and the Star-K released two reports about ingredients and about usage of Starbucks. And this, in fact, is what the Star-K said. This was released in December 2016 and is current for the current year. Remember, each report is only current for about a year because of the changing nature of the ingredients and suppliers. So this is what the Star-K says. Over the past few months, the Star-K, at the behest of Starbucks, disclaimer, there's no family relation, we just happen to be both stars in our respective industries, has conducted a top-to-bottom review of Starbucks stores, procedures, products, ingredients, and suppliers. As a result, we are now in a much better position to recommend the more popular Starbucks items available. It must be made clear, though, that many of our original concerns regarding full-service Starbucks stores that offer non-kosher items, we'll get back to them in a second. He says that unprecedented access is granted by Starbucks to its ingredients and suppliers has also enabled us to recommend a number of the Frappuccino beverages for the first time. So meaning Star K last year was let in to the Starbucks production factories, and they feel that currently now Frappuccino bases are in fact do not have a problem across the country as well. This doesn't mean to say, by the way, they say in this article that they're giving a Hechsher to the to it, but it means to say that they feel that these things by themselves on the shelf should be fine. Yes.
So when you travel around the world now, there are Starbucks in many other countries.
No, so they don't. Like they just claim it's only America. This is national production. They'll usually have, unless it's a very small country, which let's say is only a few stores will be having import, most of the country will set up their own base there and produce locally. So that might not be good. They actually want to disclaim in this article is only national. And by the way, there happen to be a few Starbucks outside of America, but it's not as frequent in South Africa. For instance, when I grew up, the closest you come to is Seattle Coffee. We don't even have any Starbucks whatsoever.
In Europe is
picking up. You're right. So this disclaimer is only currently for the U.S. right now. So we look at an ingredient, you say, okay. So like, you know, speaking with the Star K right now and Frappuccino bases and most of the syrups based on the OU and, you know, depending on the local products and let's say the local perishable products, in the end of the day, we should be in a good shape, right? I mean, so that's it, Rabbi. We're good, right? This is one of the biggest fallacies about kosher. Most people, this is the biggest fallacy that will happen about kosher, is what could there be a problem if I look at the ingredients? And the answer is lots. Elliot, you weren't the one who wrote the article, right?
No. Okay. My name, but it...
Okay, there we go. It happens to be a beautiful article, which was written by Elliot Horowitz, and on copy, and I just wonder, it's a good idea to just wonder if we have the author sitting in the room before we continue. So it happens to be, this is one of the biggest problems with kosher. Is that people will say, look, I looked in the ingredients, they told me everything inside, I know these products are kosher, so what else could there be to worry about? And the answer is a few things. So here we go. So in order to be able to understand...
Can I just make a historical note?
Yeah, sure.
Before your time, we didn't have OU, that's we didn't have OK, and we didn't have Star K. That's what we did. Yeah. We grew up looking at the ingredients. If it didn't have...
If it didn't have lard,
if it said pure vegetable oil...
And there's a problem.
I'm not saying it's not a problem.
You're right.
I'm saying that was the standard until there was...
You're right. So it happens
no
to
question
be,
this is a major improvement.
That you're right. This isn't a huge improvement. Here's the issue. Let's fill in what is not on the ingredient list and then see, like, you know, so in certain cases it may not have been a problem, but in many cases it is. Even let's say things as simple as vegetable oil, where all it says is oil. So, like, you're right. We are very fortunate today. And although many anti-Semites will say it's the Jews controlling the world and multi-millionaire industries trying to get these non-Jewish people to pay us lots of money so we become richer and control more of the world politics and make sure that, you know, we control American elections and everything like that, it's not exactly how it works. It happens to be that when a company pays for a kosher organization, they're not just paying for checking the ingredients, but much more. And this is the much more for us as we get there. So let's take a quick look. As it happens, to get behind the counter in the Starbucks, so I went to the local Starbucks, and I met the manager, a very fine lady, and I said to her, you know, I have a group of very fine, upstanding members, from many of whom I assume are customers, up till the Sunday, I would really love to do a little bit of a tour, but I thought it would be a little unruly to do it with all of us there on a Sunday morning right now, as you know, as everybody's kind of pumping up their week. And it would be very hard to do this. So I asked to do a virtual tour with her, and I put a submit, and she said I was needed to email a request, and I emailed the request. We're still caught in red tape, so we haven't yet got to that point, because it's obviously an official thing. I wanted to do behind the counter tour, just to go through the different equipment, because a lot of us, you know, we sit on the one side, we move from the counter, you know, the cashier to the serving station. That's as far as into Starbucks as we ever get. So just to get a little bit of a virtual tour ourselves, unfortunately we couldn't do it here. I'm still hopeful that we may get to see behind our local Starbucks, which is an excellent Starbucks. We'll see why in a second.
She doesn't answer. You were all showing up next Sunday.
There we go. I wouldn't mind doing the tour itself. You know exactly. It's one of these. The leverage over here. So the most basic equipment that you're going to see in a Starbucks. This is a basic coffee brewer. Okay. So over here you have, let's say, there's going to be two urns at the bottom. There's a in this area over here you have a metal cage which has the filter in it, and the grinds are placed in the filter, and the hot water is poured through them, which now filters into the urn, and when one switches on the spigot, one will open up cups. Now, this is important because that means to say that cups aren't being made specifically for you as you walk in the door. As special as you are, at the end of the day, these are on the brew on most of the day. Generally speaking, this is used for only just regular or decaf. In some Starbucks, they don't actually use decaf unless requested. They'll do it a cup-by-cup basis. But on the whole, these will be on all day long, and coffee will be produced from these. And flavors are not added here. Flavors are added, let's say the syrups are added afterwards. Okay, so this is where this will be produced. Then of course, when we get a little more fancy, we get to the espresso bar. Okay, so the espresso bar has two parts to it. Okay, over here is, when one removes this section over here, espresso bar essentially, this section, the grinds go into the section, as you know. They put the grinds in, and essentially it's the same process as brewing the coffee, just a lot more pressure, which will give you a much more concentrated shot. Usually, as you can see, there's a spigot which produces two shot glasses at once on either side. This will produce essentially the same, it's the same brewing process, it's just that the handle comes off and also have to be washed at a certain point. On the sides, we have what's called the steam ones. Okay, so these two, there's two, usually this is a smaller machine, so there's two steam ones. You can have see much bigger machines with many more steam ones. And essentially what it does is it releases steam at a very, very high temperature, of course. And this is used for, let's say, latte preparation. So when a latte is essentially a shot of espresso mixed with steamed milk. Okay, so there, and all the various combinations which come there afterwards are just basic different combinations of some of these basic functions. So what they'll do is they'll steam the milk at a very high temperature, and this steam one will go into a metal cup where the milk is, and they will add that to an espresso shot, which will be in a cup later on. Okay, so this is what generally happens. An espresso session, pretty loud sometimes. Another thing that Starbucks says is this is actually a more recent piece of equipment. This is this particular one is an oven, because there are differences between kiosks and full service stations. Starbucks is rapidly becoming more than just a coffee joint, but we'll call it a whole breakfast bar. So you go into the window and you see all the pastries, and not only do you see pastries, but you see numerous sandwiches. Included in them are some good old bacon sandwiches, and many of these you can ask at the request to heat up, and they'll heat them up. They'll put them in a ceramic plate in the oven. This is not a microwave oven. It can be, some of them are convection, some of them are combinations between microwave and real heat, but you're heating up real deal ham or bacon in these machines, and they're put on a plate afterwards and sliced in half and given to the particular customer at request. Another machine which is also important to realize is also the blending machines, which is used for all the different types of smoothies which are produced in Starbucks. They'll usually have one blending machine. These are pumps of the syrup. You have a blending machine over here, which has numerous pitchers which have blades at the bottom. You can put the pitcher into the blending machine, and for all the different smoothies that are placed, you pull down and you blend. These are washed intermittently throughout the days. There's a couple dozen of the pitchers which are used. There's another set of pitchers which is also used for the cold brew. Cold brews are generally produced only once every 5 days or so, where they let it sit, and the cold brew waits until for the customer. Sometimes it could be the day that you get it is the day that it was brewed. Sometimes it could be a few days later, and that waits in a similar type of pitcher for those days. So here we have the general production, and all the confusing names and flavors are essentially just different combinations of all of these things. Okay, whether it be the syrups or the whipped creams or the lattes or the froth or the how many espressos or how much hot water is added to the espresso and the Americano. All these are just different combinations of the basic equipment which you're using, and then they use these confusing words to talk about different sizes. Okay, so by the end of the day, you know, it is a pretty simple system, just made to look very very complex. I think there was in the movie You've Got Mail. I think one of the descriptions for Starbucks was it was a way of simple people having to feel like they make complicated decisions. So that's what ends up happening. There's lots of very complicated things that go on in a Starbucks. So here's the deal. The more important thing that we're going to focus on for just a brief moment is cleaning. Okay, so how do they clean their equipment? This is one of the rare pictures behind the scenes at a Starbucks counter. So how do they clean? So they have three tiers of cleaning. So cleaning option number one is they have little rags which are dipped in cleaning solution, which they'll do on a more frequent basis. So let's say they're going to clean, let's say the spigots of the coffee machine. Let's say they want to just sometimes briefly clean a brew basket. They'll have little rags with a special solution which they'll use to wash off. That's the most basic level of cleaning. Then the second level of cleaning, which is done throughout the day, is they have a three-part sink. Okay, so there's a wash, rinse. In the first sink, they actually, what happens is that the tap produces both hot water and soap at the same time, and then there's a rinse at a higher temperature. Okay, so there's a two-stage part to the rinsing or to the washing. And then for once a day, or when items get very, very dirty, they put them into the dishwasher. This is a particular Hobart time commercial dishwasher, and everything's put in here. The way the dishwasher works is that there's essentially two cycles. Cycle number one is water, which is mixed with soap or cleaning solution, is released at about 130 degrees. That's beyond Yad Soledad's point, which is a benchmark in halacha. And then the second cycle is absolutely boiling water rinse. Okay, and so those are the two cycles that will go on throughout the day. So this is generally what can be expected, and what we also should bear in mind is that having the CRC and Starbucks speaking to various managers of Starbucks. Starbucks is a franchise. 25% of them adhere to the policies. Okay, so there's always different variations of how they clean, when they clean, what they do. So here, let's try to break this apart. So what do we do? What is the halacha in this case? So the first question we need to ask ourselves, and this is question number one, which is never on the ingredients, and that is bishul akum. Happens to be you could have everything 100% completely kosher, and it still could be treif. Why? Because of bishul akum. Bishul akum is a taikana that Shulchan Aruch talks about. It says, "Dovah she'en unecha k'moy shehu chai, v'gam ole al shulchan malachim." If you have an item, there's two requirements for it. Cannot be eaten raw. So let's say, for example, carrots are not included in this. Let's say you have meat. Meat cannot be eaten raw, at least generally speaking, the meat that we're going to be eating, and is something which is fit to be served on royal tables. Okay, in those particular instances, if it's cooked by a non-Jewish person, I feel a bit kli Yisrael, even in the vessels of an Israelite, the vase Yisrael in a Jewish home, asr mishum bishula avdei kochavim. That's the issue of bishul akum. One of the things we do when we pay a mashkiach in a restaurant is every restaurant, they switch on the flames. And for the Sfaradim, it's not sufficient to switch on the flames. They need to actually put it into the fire. They need to put the items actually in the oven to avoid the bishul akum issues. Okay, this is a very important thing. This comes up a lot of times when we have nannies, let's say, at home looking after the kids, and they want to cook things for the kids. Not so simple. Depends what kind of things. Toasted cheese is not oil al shulchan malachim. May not be a problem, even though it's in your equipment and your ingredients. But there are other issues. Maybe can they cook dinner for you? Not so simple. One has to ask questions when it comes to the bishul akum aspects of that. When it comes to our homes as well. So the question is the following: is what about coffee? So the problem is that coffee only started becoming very very popular in the 1500s, and the Gemara already stopped talking in the year 500 or so. So what do you do about that? Meaning, so nobody's talking about. So it's interesting that it only appears in the later literature, later Jewish halachic literature, because it only arrived then. So what do we do? What do we have to compare it to? So is there bishul akum on coffee? So like, forget the ingredients, right? Can a non-Jewish person, you know, roast our coffee for us? Can they brew our coffee? Is this a bishul akum issue? Why are we not even concerned about that? So it all goes back to a very fascinating Tosafos. Tosafos says in a number of places in Brachos and Avodah Zarah, which says the following: Od yesh tam acher lahatira sheichar de'eboi mishum bishul avdei kochavim. Tosafos says that maybe there's a reason why sheichar. What is sheichar?
Beer.
Beer, right. So how's beer made?
It's brewed.
Okay, beer is generally
fermented.
Fermented grain. Okay, fermented grain, which is left to soak in water for a long time, turns alcoholic after a certain while, depending on your cask and depending on how you set it up. So he says, he said there's no bishul akum on that. So he hechi da tvua botnel the gabi amayim inyan birkas shakol nia bidvaroi hachonami he botnel the inyan isr bishul. So he says, you know what? What's the bracha on beer? You say shakol, which means to say you're saying the bracha on the water. You should be saying Berei Minim Ezonos. Why didn't you say Berei Minim Ezonos? When, after all, it is a grain-based drink. This is because it's just the taste of the grain. But actually, we're saying the bracha essentially on flavored water. Essentially, this is what Tosafos says over here. It's Paskin in the Shach. It's a Machlokas. It's Paskin. Says the Aruch HaShulchan many years later. So here he says it. Let's see his application. It says, "Lechein mutar lishtois kafe v'shokolado." So says the Aruch HaShulchan, based on a pre-chadash, that there's no bishul akum when it comes to coffee and hot chocolate. Why? Because ultimately it is, we consider it flavored water, And why is water mutter? Why is there no bishul akum on water? Because it's nechal kamois shehu chai. Because you can have water cold, you can have water hot, as the Shulchan Aruch said. And therefore, coffee is in the same camp, according to most of the poskim today, and therefore, there's no bishul akum issues, number one, on coffee. That's something which most people forget to even think about. But first of all, there's no bishul akum. So, okay, through the first hurdle. And now it gets a little more complex. So, let's go to foundations two in halacha. Foundations two, absorptions. Yeah, what was that?
That was without milk.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So the milk, again, so it depends on Chalav Yisrael for many people. Many milks today are under OU, which means to say they're working within the rubric of Moshe Feinstein in terms of the FDA, requirements serving as a sufficient enough shomer for the milk. So it would depend on the milk they use locally. But for Chalav Yisrael, it's a little more complex.
No, but as far as the visual...
We're going to get there in a second. Yeah, you're right. So steaming the milk is going to be a problem. Yeah, no question. For the lattes are going to be our biggest issue. We're going to get there in a second. So,
milk can be drank raw too.
Yeah. Milk, absolutely, you're right. But we're going to get to the visual alchemy. Yeah, you're right. There's no problem. We're going to get into more of the blios in a second to milk. You're right. That's not going to be our visual issue. Let's move on to the more complicated issues, and that is absorptions. Look, it's all right to know that the ingredients list is fine, but if I'm in a full-service Starbucks, okay, so we're not talking about an airport kiosk. Our kiosks are much simpler. At a kiosk, you can get almost anything. We'll see the limitations on that. It's more a full Starbucks, a full-service Starbucks. You walk into a full-service Starbucks, and they're serving their breakfast material, they're serving their salads, and they're serving their pastries. So it happens to be, when they're heating those things up, they don't heat up their salads generally, but when they're seating up their breakfast goods or their pastries, and they're putting it in the oven, so that's going on ceramic plates, and we're talking about real deal, non-kosher plates, and the problem's going to be, is not so much necessarily that we're putting those onto the coffee machines, but they're washed in the same areas. So this is going to be our real issue that we're going to have to deal with over here. Why? Because we know that there's two aspects when it comes to dealing with kosher. Number one is the actual, what we call mamoshes, the actual tangible items of non-kosher. Like, let's say there's sauce, there's bacon sauce on the tray. So that's called mamoshes. But then there's a level which we have to be more concerned about, and that is called blios, absorptions. The walls of pots absorb under heat. This is an important thing. Not under cold. In general, unless it's been there for a long time, for a 24-hour period, there's no absorption into walls based on simply just sitting there on a cold basis. If you have beyond 120 degrees, which is called Yad Soled Esbay, that a hand is burnt or a child's hand would be burnt on, so 120 onwards is going to be a concern for what's the imparting of taste. So now the question is the following, is if this is true, let's go back to our washing cycle for just a quick moment. So it happens to be that there's two cycles. One's at 120, 130, which is beyond Yad Soledas, and then there's the scalding rinse. So at that point in time, at the scalding rinse, all the treif blios, let's say the ceramic bowls, are coming out and are being mixed into, with the same scalding water, into any other equipment which would be put in a dishwasher, necessarily. So that means to say that could really treif up any piece of equipment which would ever go into a dishwasher, which would mean to say any... Essentially, most of the equipment that we've seen is going to be trained. Okay, so let's get to the next step. So we're going to not focus on the sources of blios for a second. I'd like to go to Caleb. Before we even get to the soap, let's just appreciate there's different levels of Caleb. So here's what the Shulchan Aruch says. Not all Caleb on the same end, and absorption doesn't work the same way. Here's what the Shulchan Aruch says it. Chaim, if you have the heat, says the Shulchan Aruch, shall kli rishon shayad zadet espoi, Mevashel ba'asur oisar kulay. So let's say I have what's called a kli rishon. So example being is that a kli rishon is something which is or was on the fire. Okay, so it is the primary source of heat which is being used. So that is going to be oisar kulay. That means to say, the example being over here is, let's say I have a... Let me make sure I got this right. Yeah. If you have a treif pot... Okay, so a treif pot which was used within 24 hours, and you're boiling water in it, and you drop into that a spoon. You dip into a spoon, the entire volume of that spoon, everything, we consider the entire spoon to be treif, through and through, on all sides. And if you want to kashrut that, you need to have 60 against the volume of that spoon. Okay, that spoon will be completely treif. That's considered It's entered into a Kli Rishon problem. However, aval chum shel Kli Sheni einu mevashel. The heat of a Kli Sheni, we say, doesn't necessarily cook to that level. And he goes on to bring a few Yesh Omrims. He says the following. He says in the second Yesh Omrim, V'yesh Omrim du mikol makom, hu mafritu mavliya v'oyser kedei klipa. So one of the opinions of Shulchan Aruch is that a Kli Sheni, let's say that the non-kosher bowl I am dropping my spoon into, is not the vessel that the water was cooked in, but let's say I cooked in a treif pot and I poured it into a cup. And now, in that cup, I dip a spoon, that's a Kli Sheni. So the spoon will still become treif, but only what's called kedei klipa, which means to say an external layer, a very fractional layer around the edges. Okay, so there's less treif in that spoon. Not the whole spoon becomes treif, but we'll call it a shell of that spoon becomes treif. He says, however, one should be concerned with a Kli Sheni, making something osur lechachila, al bidiavad, mutar beloy kliklipa, vadocha ba'avasagi. He says, in a case of bidiavad, when you're talking about a Kli Sheni, then we'll say, if you're in a situation where you didn't have a choice to get into the situation, then simply washing it would be sufficient. Okay, so we're going to have to work out, what would that apply to? Kli Sheni obviously is one tier lower than a Kli Rishon. In terms of what's going on over here. Let's just go back to our dishwasher for a second. Dishwasher is... that's going to be a Kli Rishon. So you have scalding water which is being ejected, which is now touching both kosher and non-kosher items first time around. They've been washed, essentially, and now is interacting with them. We're talking about a Kli Rishon, okay? So that there's no way of getting round, okay? However, we're going to have to think a little bit later, is let's say it's made treif. Let's say that our item is made treif. Let's say, for instance, our brew basket. How is that? How is that touching the new kosher coffee? As a Kli Rishon or as a Kli Sheni? Let's think about this for a second. I now have, let's say my brew basket has been made treif. Let's say I went into the dishwasher. And now I'm making new coffee in those urns. Let's think about this for a moment. What was that? The urn is definitely so near Kli Sheni. But let's think about this. There's hot water just coming through, it's touching first. Grinds, filter, then brew basket, right? So the brew basket may be, some people would say, even an eerie Kli Sheni at this point in time. So this is going to be important in terms of our halachas. So this is number two. Number three is the kalim. And here we finally get to our soap. Okay, it happens to be that there is a way of getting around the blios, absorptions of non-kosher. So for instance, here's the way Shulchan Aruch describes it. Shulchan Aruch says, let's say you have a fly. Okay, and a fly got ground up into your food. Right, not very pleasant. A fly happens to be a non-kosher item. Okay, can't eat flies. Okay, so just to clarify that point. So let's say you have a fly, and it is now ground up into your food, and your food does not have the ratio of bittul. So it doesn't have 60 in the volume against the fly to be bittul. What is the halakha? You can't extract it, you can't discern it. So if you have a whole fly, you have a problem. It's never bottled. But let's say it's ground up, it went through your liquidizer, and now you can't see anything. You can't see no fly, no wings, no legs. And you know that it's in there, but you know that you've got a very small smoothie, so therefore your smoothie now didn't have the volume of 60 flies against that fly. So what's that halacha? So the Kaddish Shulchan Aruch says, he says, if you have a fly which fell, v'nimcha gufo nesoicha, im ha'eter rabba olav mutarim. If you have more, not 60 more, if you have just a little more of the heter over that liquidized fly, it is mutar. And of course, you can sieve it out. What is he saying is let's say it's irretractable. You can't get it out now, but it's in here. You don't need a regular shear of bittul. You don't need a 60 against 1 ratio in this case. Why? The Shulchan Aruch's reasoning is because a fly is giving you what's called tam lifgam, bad taste. Okay, so it is not adding taste that you like or appreciate, and therefore is bottle, even when you have a regular rive, a 1-to-2 ratio against it. Okay, in a case where it's irretractable. This is once it's happened. Yeah, I mean this. Yes, lechachila you can drink this, but I mean unfortunately you're in a better situation that your fly ever got into your smoothie. So now. What was that?
So bacon also has that.
No. So bacon we don't say is giving time to come. Okay, flowers are time to come. Bacon is, some people would be very happy to have bacon flavors in their coffee. Another example of what's considered time lifgad. A pot which has been used, but it's no longer been used, it hasn't been used in 24 hours. There are absorptions of whatever taste were in the walls, okay? But after 24 hours, we say that's time lifgad. So this is another example of what's considered time lifgad. So, a third example of time lifgad is soap. Here's the example in Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says, Yira Elis, says the Shulchan Aruch, She'im nosno efer b'mayim chamim shebi yura, koidim shenicha kaderos b'soichol, avo bisha shuman dobuk bohen, mutar da'al yedei ha'efer hu noisen tam lifgam. So he says the following. Imagine that I have a big treif pot, okay? And this treif pot, now I'm going to put other utensils into it while it's boiling. Okay, so usually what would happen is there would trafe up anything which is going to be put into this. This is our dishwasher situation. But I add to the water afer. So I add, let's say, ashes to the water. Now, why would anybody be adding ashes to the water? Because it's a cleansing material, right? So therefore, this afer is going to be added to the water to be able to contribute to the cleaning process. In this particular instance, he says, it's tam lifgam, and it will not create absorptions in, let's say, the spoon I put into that pot, which is kosher. It won't become treif. Because why? Because it has soap. So now we need to go back over here. Here's where the real contention happens. What happens in our dishwashers or our sinks that are going on at Starbucks, as an example? So first thing that happens is, first round is rinse with soap. Well, it's warm. It's beyond Yad Soleles. So I have soapy water, and it's touching immediately anything. Let's say it was treif. There was treif sauce on those ceramic bowls, and it's hitting that, and it's hitting my, let's say, my espresso cup, right? So, and it hits both of them. Is there a problem? The answer is no. First wash is not a problem. Why? Because the soap automatically will make anything it touches nice and time. If gum will destroy it from taste. Nobody is eating that once it's hit the soap. And therefore, even if it comes back and hits my espresso cup, my spigots, whatever else, my pitchers, whatever else is in my dishwasher or my sink, no problem. Why? Because it is nice and time to come. The big problem is round two. Round two is at a scalding temperature, much, much hotter than round one. But now, so that means to say, let's say that at 120, it's a 2-minute cycle. At 120, my first round, the soap started bringing out the absorptions, the bleos. Right? But it didn't bring all of them out because it wasn't at the same level of temperature that it was used at. So let's say the oven doesn't go on at 130. The oven's put, let's say, to 400. So at 400 degrees, that was when the sauce was being essentially absorbed into this bowl. Right? When is it coming out? Only when scalding water's touching it. Right? So when the scalding water is touching it, is there soap? No, it's a rinse cycle. So now there's no nice and time left gum. You see what's happening over here? Now we have a real problem. That means to say, according to this, all kalim which would be in the dishwasher would be treif, essentially, because of this. There's no soap to help you. Yes?
That's an assumption that we make a difference between 120 and 130. Who's to say that's true? Who's to say that once you're greater than 120, there's a difference at how hot you get?
There is, because again, what we say is the rule in general is called Kabbalah Kach Paltoi, which means to say that the way that it came in is the way it comes out. So the degree of heat is also the degree that it goes in and comes out. So it happens to be that the absorptions went in at a very high temperature, which means to say that, logically speaking, it's not going to be coming out. That's the halachic reality, and it's also the truth. You know, when you go to, like, industrial kashrus, when you go to, like, let's say, these big plants, and I had the opportunity of going with the OU for once we did Yoradea in Smicha, we went to some of these plants, and you see these things. They have these things called, like, steam kettles. You can have something, like, you know, as tall as you, which is like a... which is a container which has a steam, essentially a wall, which in the wall is a very hot temperature steam, and inside they cook, let's say, soup, industrial soup pots. You know, you see these things are huge. So, you know, you can, if you cook on, you know, let's say you use one of those steam kettles for a, let's say you produce a soup, and now you do a clean run with just water, you will see at the same temperature that the water starts looking a little murky. Why? Because of the absorptions in the walls. But you'll only get there when you get to the same temperatures that it's coming in. So that's what's going on over here. So now we have a problem. So what do we do over here? Oh, yeah, don't leave. Okay, so there happens to be a machlekes over here in understanding the Shulchan Aruch.
Some would understand the Shulchan Aruch, the Pashas over here, is saying the following. Even if I'm going to put in soap, and I'm going to mix soap into this pot, even if there's going to be later boilings of this pot, the soap would be poigein, would make inedible any absorptions in those walls for the future, even those which didn't come out. Therefore, according to this reading of the Shulchan Aruch, ultimately, in our case of the dishwasher, as long as there was a soap cycle first, it would be poigem not just the items or the source on the surface, but even that which is absorbed in the walls, which will come out later in the rinse cycle, and you're done, you're fine. That's when we're reading the Shulchan Aruch. The Chazon Ish disagrees with this. The Chazon Ish says, in Hilchos Yoredeya, talks about this, and he says, no, it doesn't make sense. The Chazon Ish says that if you have a high level temperature later on, secondary, that then that's going to come out, and it wasn't affected by the lower temperature earlier soap levels. So there's a machlokes haposkim. So what are you doing in these situations? Practically speaking, let's try to get a sense of what do we actually do. So it happens to be there's extremes, and then there's a machlokes in the middle. When it comes to latte, lattes are the most complicated issues when it comes to this. Let's go back to our production for a second. A latte, if you look at a latte. A latte is usually using steamed milk. Okay, so here's your wand, your steam wand, which is put in over here. This particular cup is the steam cup is something which is going to always be washed either in a sink or a dishwasher. Okay, that means to say that this is, ostensibly speaking, according to the Chazon Ish, is treif. Okay, what is it now when this is happening? When you're steaming your milk, what level of kli is it? It's a kli rishon. We have boiling steam coming into your kli rishon, which is now, this is a treif kli, with boiling hot milk. This is a big problem. Unless you're going to rely on the Shulchan Aruch, that reading of the Shulchan Aruch against the Chazon Ish, you have a real problem, which is why, even when it comes to, even let's say, one second, let's go back to our latte, on our most organizations, the CRC, the Star K will say, at a regular full service Starbucks, you've got problems because that steam cup, anything that which is using a steam cup is going to be a problem. Espressos, though, are different. Espressos, in fact, are a little different. Why? Because the only real issue is actually the shot glass itself. The spigots are washed separately, meaning to say that the spigot where it comes down from, according to Star K, is washed separately. These are washed in the dishwasher. So what do you do? What's the simple solution is? Is ask them for a disposable. You can just say, I'd like to have an espresso, but put it in a disposable. Don't use the shot glass. Or if it's going into another drink, let's say, for instance, an Americano. What is an Americano? Americano is espresso mixed diluted in water, essentially. Right? Okay? And so therefore, there's no steamed milk. Or anything which is just using espresso or regular coffee, not steamed milk, would be fine, based on if it's got an espresso base without using the steam cup itself. Yes?
Why is the in the case of the milk? Why is the spigot not the key?
Yeah,
it's cooked in the machine, not in the little metal container.
Say again, the
milk that's being heated for the latte.
Yeah,
is not being steamed in that kettle that they're pouring into. It's being heated in the machine. That's the kirisha.
No. So what happens is they bring regular milk in this steam cup, and then what they do is the wand itself is releasing steam into that right now. So it's being cooked in that cup right now. That's the problem. So generally we try to be machmir for the Ramah about glass, but yes, it's better to avoid. That's the recommendation. No, it is a discussion about glass absorbing or not. Regular coffee, folks. Yes, anything which is espresso-based without steam milk is generally fine. Latte, problem. This is in general the general direction of the most organizations. Regular coffee, you think this should be a no-brainer. Problem is it's not so simple because of the brew baskets, right? So the brew baskets are, depending on the Starbucks, are washed. Sometimes in the sinks, sometimes they're just rinsed, right? Or sometimes they're put in the dishwasher. What do you do about that? So this is where there's a lot of interesting discussions. See how that brew basket, right? So this is what the brew basket does. The filter goes into that. What do you do about that? That could also be treif. So happens to be, the CRC put out a very, very fabulous article in 2011. This is the opinion of Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz, who is the poisek, who was, well now Rav Reis is the poisek for the CRC. due to the concerns outlined above, the Av Beis Rav Schwartz Schlitter ruled that a full-service Starbucks should not consume any item which uses equipment that may have been washed together with non-kosher utensils, but may be lenient to the kiosk store, where the heated non-kosher items are much less common in situations where this really presents a particular hardship to individuals, they should consult their local rep. Okay, so this is Rav Schwartz, was very machmir. And in fact, the CRC, if you go to the CRC's list for a second, yeah, this was released in the last 3 weeks. This is the CRC's list today, to date, of what it's really worth looking into. It's a one-pager. And you'll notice something interesting. There's the full kiosk, the full-service stores on the left, and there's the kiosk stores on the right. You'll notice most of the kiosk things are green, which is fine. You'll notice something interesting over here each one's got a little note at the bottom. So espressos with disposables is fine, generally speaking, with one stipulation. They also say that they don't recommend regular coffee because of the brew basket. That's what the CRC says today. Happens to be that on the other extreme is the star case list. Now, this is very interesting. You look at this as the star case list for a second. Column number on the left, over here where all the checks and X's are regular full-service Starbucks. Okay? So this means to say on a regular full-service Starbucks where they're serving lots of other things, when it comes to the Frappuccinos, they're even fine on a regular basis in a regular Starbucks, they feel. Cappuccino's a bit of a problem. Americano's fine, as we talked about. Almond milk bottled drinks at the Starbucks are fine. Notice that the entire latte section over here is not fine in a regular Starbucks, even according to the star, okay? When it comes to cold brew, iced coffees, everything's fine even in a full service. Macchiatos, never know how to pronounce that. Is not part of a full service. On the right-hand column is a column where it's either a kiosk, so they have nothing else. They have no sandwiches, they have no breakfast being served, so there's no trafe problem with the kalim. But they also will say in this, there's another two examples I want to get to, that is that they talk about what they call kosher-friendly stores. So here are the kosher-friendly stores, and look at number one on the list is 316 Rockway Turnpike. Okay, so this is the list they effective December 2016. These are the Starbuckses where they feel that everything on the right-hand column should be fine. Okay, we should include the lattes, by the way. Okay, because the policy's added, and you can see they always are around Jewish centers, right? Flatlands Park Slope, Hewlett is also included. So this is relevant to us. This is the star case, really, when it comes to this. What about the regular coffees? They feel that it's all fine. So I spoke to the OU actually, because I feel the OU toes the center in this regard, and they said a very interesting thing. Rav Schechter says in general, so this is a very fascinating point when it comes down to regular coffee. The following: whoever comes down, there's a machlokes first of all, the Chazon Ish, and how to regularly interpret the Shulchan Aruch, whether a soap cycle will invalidate time for the next cycle, when the next cycle starts. What do you do in that? How do you pass in that case? So your CRC says, we should go like the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish asks a very valid reading in the Shulchan Aruch, and that's how we should pass it. So Rav Schechter says, I agree that this, the Chazon Ish is true. He says, but you can't make that policy for everybody. Schechter says, there is a more makil way of reading the Shulchan Aruch. That should be policy for a kashrus organization. But individuals, he says, like you, I remember him saying this person, he says, yeshiva bachrim, people in yeshiva should try not to use this based on this chazon ish. So it means to say there's a gray area even within this. One step more than that. Let's think about the brew basket, which is the concern for the concern in general. We're talking about, as we discussed before, the brew basket is going to probably be an eerie cliche, okay, because the hot water, which is going through the coffee grinds, is now going through the filter paper and touching the metal brew basket afterwards, before it actually goes down into the urn, right? So it's a cliche at that time, which means to say, let's say it was treif, right? Let's say it was put in the dishwasher. Let's say it is treif. So what was the halacha about klisheni? What was the halacha? The halacha is that it is oyster kedei klipa, that we'll say that a fractional outside, we'll call it a skin of it, or treif, will be added to that coffee. Now what's going to happen? That's going to fall into your urn. What's happening? It's now going to be bottled. Because as I have a clay clipper, I have now a skin level of that brew basket, which is treif, which now fell into, of treif taste, which is now in my bigger urn. That's going to be bottled, because there's much more kosher coffee which wasn't assert through that process, which is now all swimming together in this in my urn. Which means that there will be a mental. But here's the kicker. You can't ask people to move vital things. This is what's called you can't walk in and say, you know, do this for me and there's going to be vital which is created. There's a knas. In that case, it doesn't work. So how can you do this? The answer is that brewed coffee wasn't made for you. The brewed coffee was sitting there all the time. Right? It's for anybody who walks in, they'll just flip the spigot for the coffee to be made. So says the OU, therefore, regular coffee is fine. But you can't rely on the same logic. Let's say even for, even when you come to, let's say, the lattes. Like this, let's say you're going to say, okay, so we're going to say that maybe it's bottled because maybe even if it's g'day kulai, we'll say it's bottled and the rest of the milk. You can't say it because they're making it for you. They never make a latte. They're not waiting there with a steamed milk container. It'll make it much faster to be in Starbucks. They make every single steamed milk for you. There's no way to get around it. Comes back to French press questions as well. Let's say you do a French press. If they're doing it specifically for you, same problem. If that was washed in the dishwasher and it's treif, and they're making it specially for you, you can't rely on that. You see this? So that's why the coffee itself, the regular coffee, says though, you should be fine. So what we're seeing as an interesting dichotomy, if you come back to this as a whole, lattes in general are much more problematic. Espressos in general are less problematic as a whole. Regular coffees are a matter of debate, interestingly enough. And in the regular coffees, I think that the most tenable middle of the approach is Rosh Shechter says, when it comes to what the OU has confirmed the OU policy is that we can rely on a regular coffee. A regular coffee. This is what happens when it comes to, let's say, business meetings. When they bring those big, they'll bring out a large tank of coffee, or let's say a rest stop. When you have, let's say, a container over here of regular coffee, we assume that the coffee itself is kosher. Regular unflavored coffee is kosher. It could be at certain points they're going to rinse out or clean this, and it may even be cleaned with trade things. Right, at the end of the day, okay, so that's a problem. It depends. That's the problem. So generally speaking, these urns are not used for flavored coffee.
In a store like France, that's why a regular stop somewhere, you can't assume that.
I don't think they're switching between, you know, let's say your hazelnut French vanilla and your regular. I don't think they're switching randomly every few days just to make you coffee. From what I understand. That we assume that it was regular coffee, it's always been regular coffee, always will be regular coffee in that spigot. If you have one which has, let's say, three sacks which are going through, all the grinds are going through and they're coming through one spigot, you have problems. Okay? But if it's going through each one as its own spigot, then in this case we rely on this in the same way with the regular coffee. One extra wrinkle which comes down to this is that just the stakes, you know, when we're looking at this. Happens to be that Rav Heinemann, really who's behind the Star K, tremendous Pesach, who lives in Baltimore. I used to go to Shira Motze Shabbos at Neri Yisrael. Really a tremendous person, not only just in terms of halacha, but also in terms of understanding mechanics of things. So he was behind the release of this list of the Starbucks, the Star K list, which is actually very, very mekil. Okay? Remember, even the lattes which are asr, he would say are fine at kiosks, and would be fine at the kosher-friendly ones, like the ones nearby. But here's something which is what he adds. And this is a tremendous, tremendous kula. He says that if you're on Shazat Chak, so he says Shazat Chak, if you are on the Derech, so he says if you're traveling and you have no access to coffee, right, and you're on, let's say you're going and the only place you can find is a Starbucks, so he would say, if you go back to that list for just a moment, let's go back to that list for a second, here we are, over here, he would say that when you're by Derech, it's considered Shazat Chak, and all these things would be mutter. That's how far the vitamin goes. All now, this includes going to take lattes, mochas, frappuccinos, all the milk. Now, only specific ones he says. Now, I spoke to the OU, and I just like, to me, this is hard to understand, because it is based on a Yad Ephraim, which is based on a Nodi Yehuda, and he is a Bar Hachi. To say this, if you think about this, I was discussing with Rabbi Gersten, who's from the OU. It's hard to say that your frappuccino is a shastadak.
It's right now.
You're stuck at the airport. And you can't have your espresso or your americano because you need your frappuccino. I just think that, you know, it may be true that it's considered shastadak in general. But to say that the Shaz Tachak, that your particular flavor, or your particular drink is going to be Shaz Tachak, I think I think, you know, I'm sure we could find people who could be a shahaz atachak, and I have no doubt that some of us would feel that. But nonetheless, I don't think that would constitute real shahaz atachak. Just to put it one word, I remember this when I learned this the first time. This is the Mesilas Hasharim, and this is just a really important thing to remember. Mesilas Hasharim is not talking about coffee, but he says the following. He's talking about being very, very careful, and he says the following. He says, when it comes to eating things which are asr, listen to how he describes this. Very powerful statement. Whether you're eating things which are treif themselves, or things which are mixed into treif. He says, all the different things that we talked about. He's talking about the middle of the kiosk, being clean in oneself. He says, "Tzarech diktuk galov tzarech yizuk." A person needs to be very careful. Once he has a lot of personal motivation. Yesh tavas alev amisavim amachal matal v'chisron chisron kis beisur atara v'sikayas v'ayim. Because look, first of all, monetarily, and then also in terms of we just really, you know, when we're by ourselves at a rest stop, whatever else it is, and we're stuck somewhere, we start rationalizing, right? Uvepratei rabim kachol hadinei mayodum v'vori v'sivran poskim v'amekhu bohem. A person who says, you know, it's fine, I'm sure you're right. He says, it could hurt you. He says, a consequence of eating something which is non-kosher isn't that you are, you know, you're going to have to deal with it later. Is that he introduces a concept which is called tintu alev, which means to say that that spiritually affects you. You now you absorb something which is spiritually going to affect you. That's a terrible thing. Forget the punishment. Think about the consequences. He goes on to say the following, and this to me always resonates. That's a very severe language. Anybody who's a thinking individual, says, think about it like poison. Okay, so he says the following. You're like, I'm sure it's not poison. I'll be alright. I'm sure there's shishim. Right? The ingredients don't say poison after all, right? So I'm sure it'll be fine. He says, you're not going to take your life in your own hands like this. I mean, that, you know, and you're welcome to, but it's foolish. It's a spiritual poison. So just putting things in context, I feel like because there's so little time which is dedicated to this particular topic itself, you know, coffees, I feel that most of us, and myself included, until I did a little bit of research, you end up being in these circumstances where you really don't know what to do. And you're like, should I do this? Should I not do this? Regular coffee, not regular coffee, what should I be doing? And it's important to, his framework of looking at it is think about it like poison, which doesn't mean to say you should not drink anything. It means to say we should educate ourselves to know what's mutter and asr. And as we saw, not everything's asr, not everything's mutter. I think there's a middle ground. The middle ground is that, as we talked about beforehand, is that there's a difference between a latte and an espresso. And even when it comes to regular coffee, there's a difference. To know what the background of this is, not to dismiss wholeheartedly that there's nothing. These crazy kashrus organizations looking for money are trying to change our lives. And on the other hand, not saying that everything is awesome, right? Because one needs to know where the halakha applies itself and how it applies in these particular issues. I hope that this again is the beginning. There were so many more questions we didn't cover. But this is the beginning of trying to understand the framework of why this is so complicated. Also what complicates it is that different Starbucks operate differently. So that's why this is. We didn't get to Dunkin' Donuts, we didn't get to fully the rest stops and the full clarification. Of Mesa Shem, I want you to get that on the screen.